With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The majority of the show today will be football, but we do have to start out on a somber note. And we look back today at a tremendous human being, an unbelievable baseball player. Yes, he's a Hall of Famer, and that's what you associate him with, is baseball. But really, it's more than that. And not only was he a Hall of Famer, he's just a Hall of Fame person. As unfortunately, we lost Hank Aaron today at the age of 86. And I could go through all the stats for you. I could tell you he's a Hall of Famer. He's the home run king. And I know some people still consider him the home run king because of what many people do consider is the tainted record of one Barry Bonds. And you could look back at his career, the 25 All-Stars, being an MVP, being a World Series champion. And you also know the number 715, and he ended his career with 755 home runs, but the importance of the number 715 with him passing Babe Ruth on the all-time home run list at the time in 74 to become the home run king and hitting that home run off Al Downing going up against the Dodgers. But, you know, you look back at it, and yes, and clearly I wasn't alive. Clearly I never saw him play. I did meet Hank Aaron once, which I'll talk about a little bit later on, and just how surreal of a moment that was for me at such a young age. And you could just tell being in his presence how nice of a man he was and how he was at an appearance. And you know how sometimes athletes could be at appearances, you don't know how engaged they are. But when I met Hank Aaron, he was very engaged and is one of the coolest experiences in the sports world that I've really ever encountered. And one of these figures that are just larger than life. You hear so much about him. You hear about the legend of Henry Aaron. And then when you're able to meet him at such a young age like I was, it was unbelievable, and I was really in awe. So I'll tell that in a little bit. But when you talk about Henry Aaron and you look back at Hank Aaron, what is the first baseball thing that comes to mind? The first baseball thing that comes to mind, like we said, April 8th, 1974, when he surpassed Babe Ruth on the all-time home run list, and he hit home run 715. But it goes so much more than that, because unfortunately for Hank Aaron, he had to put up with an absurd amount of racism. No one should have to put up with any amount of racism, but what he had to put up with was just absolutely ridiculous. And I was reading about it today, and I knew about it obviously before today, but I was reading a lot of the obituaries and a lot of the articles about it. And you just go through and you see the hate mail. You hear how he would get taunted on the road, and people would just say the nastiest of things to him and call him the N-word. He would get death threats. And the FBI actually had to step in a few times and investigate not only the death threats, but also people were threatening, if you break this record, if you break this record that was there for 35, 40 years, if you go back at it, or more than that, if you break this record, we're going to kidnap your children. Like, think about that. And how much now do we talk about mental health and the awareness of mental health with athletes? And at that time, and it's a different time, you know, there's no social media. Mental health, I don't even know if it was a thought then, because I don't even know if it was a thought 5-10 years ago, to just be fully transparent. And you go through all that, and he was still able to show up to the ballpark every day with a smile on his face and continue to hit home run after home run after home run. You know, all through the lead up of him breaking that record and him putting himself at 715 home runs. Like, can you imagine? And I know on Twitter nowadays, people get death threats and people get hate mail still to this day. and fans say sometimes disgusting things to athletes that should never, and I don't even know why people would say that to athletes, but you look back, this guy was able to perform on the biggest stage with all the pressure, all the eyes on him, and people were rooting against him just simply because a white guy and a legend in Babe Ruth had this record for so many years, and people didn't want to see a black guy break this record. And just think about how messed up of a world that is, and just how awful of a thing that is, where some, because of the color of his skin, not only didn't want to see him break that record, but they didn't celebrate it when he did. And what did Hank Aaron do? Hank Aaron did nothing wrong. And how he showed up through all of that. And I was reading some quotes that he had at the time, or he eventually said it later in his book. And in the book, it talked about the buildup to 7:15. And he said, there were times during the chase when I was so angry and tired and sick of it all, I wish I could get on a plane and not get off until I was somewhere they've never heard of Babe Ruth. Like, think about that. Think about the power of that quote. You work your entire life to be a baseball player. And not only are you a baseball player and you reach that, you are the creme de la creme. You know, you are as big as they come in terms of baseball players and legends. And you're about to break this record, but because of the racism in the world, he had to deal with things that no one should ever have to deal with, just because of simply the color of his skin. And he went on to say, but damn it all, I had to break that record. I had to do it for Jackie Robinson and people and my people and myself and for everybody who ever called me an N-word. Like, think about that. And there are times where people say hateful things about you, and they do so clearly out of hate and clearly out of a malicious intent, but they're clearly trying to prevent you from growing and achieving because of where that hatred is built from and where it stems from. And Hank Aaron knew, even though this is painful, even though this hurts, and people aren't thinking about my feelings and what I'm going through, just showing up to work and doing my job, and I'm doing my job at an elite level, and I have to deal with this nonsense and just this disgusting act of racism and bigotry. And the only way I win here is if I just sit back and basically have to embrace it and basically have to take it. And I have to try to block it out. And it's amazing how he was able, with all that was on his mind, to still put up the numbers that he did. It's astonishing how he did it, quite frankly. But he knew it was something bigger than just a record. It was to stand up to all the people that hated him just because of his skin color and say, pretty much, you may try to tear me down, you may try to bring me down, and clearly the words did hurt him and did affect him, but I'm going to power through this. And I'm going to show you what you don't want to see happen, and you're going to have to deal with it. And that's the best way to defeat a bully, to defeat a racist. And that's something that we could learn from Hank Aaron. Of course, no one should have to go through that. No one should. But if everyone takes a piece of Hank Aaron and implements them, you know, that chunk of him into your life, the world would be a much better place. Because if those things were said to me, I wouldn't have blamed him if he walked away. But he knew he couldn't. He knew he had to stand up to all the racists and all the bigots. And he did that, getting up to the plate each and every night and continuing to hit home run after home run. I was reading some more quotes today. One from President George W. Bush. He grew up poor and faced racism as he worked to become one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Hank never let the hatred he faced consume him. Henry Louis Aaron was a joyful man, a loving husband, and a proud father. Also, former President Jimmy Carter said the death of their dear friend sat at him and his wife, and he went on to say, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, he has been a personal hero to us. A breaker of records and racial barriers, his remarkable legacy will continue to inspire countless athletes and admirers for generations to come. So this is a sad day. Not only did we lose a legendary baseball player, an icon, but a legendary human being, as Hank Aaron did pass away today at the age of 86. I also heard Chipper Jones speak. Let's play you two of those cuts right now. Chipper Jones said his goal was always trying to meet the standard that Hank Aaron set.
I consider myself very lucky that Hank Aaron was a part of this particular organization, because he set the bar not only for what you should strive for as a baseball player, but as a human being.
Also, Chipper Jones discussed how special it was to be around the presence of Hank Aaron.
He spread his grace on everything and everyone that he came in contact with, just the epitome of class and integrity. And it's been a rough go for us here, you know, in Braves country, but you know, none hits harder than this one. It's a truly sad day for our organization.
And you realize everyone that talks about him, clearly they mention his greatness as a baseball player, but most of the quotes are an extensive detail about the type of person he is. And how many times with athletes do we just look at athletes as athletes? You know, LeBron James, great basketball player. Tom Brady, great football player. Wayne Gretzky, great hockey player. But what is really neat is even when you reach that level of greatness, when, of course, people are always going to talk about what you did on the court, on the ice, on the field, but when people have so many things to say about the quality of human being, that shows you how special Hank Aaron was. And I'll never forget, I must have been no older than 10. Hank Aaron was doing an autograph signing at a mall in Long Island. And my father knew the person that was running the autograph signing. So they invited my dad and myself out there. And I'm in the car. I'll never forget this as a kid. And my dad's telling me, we're going to meet one of the greatest baseball players and one of the greatest human beings of all time. And at the time, as a sports fan, you know, only being 10 years old, I knew Hank Aaron, of course, as the guy that was the home run king. And my dad was telling me in the car about all that he went through during the home run chase and surpassing Babe Ruth. And, you know, at the time, and now looking back at it years later, you go to these autograph signings, there's so many people in line, it's kind of get your picture, get your autograph, and then move on. What I also remember from that day, and me being a kid as well, that any kid that was there, Hank Aaron took his time to talk to that child. And that was so neat for me, just to be able to talk to him for, it was what, probably 3-5 minutes? And I left that day learning more about the importance of Hank Aaron from what my dad was telling me. And for so many years, growing up as a kid in my childhood home, and my parents still live in that house and the photo's still there, there is a photo of Hank Aaron on the iconic 715th home run, and he signed it. And that was something I look at every day when I woke up as a kid. That photo. And it was just such a neat experience at such a young age to meet someone that you know is bigger than life. And that is almost just someone that you hear all the legendary tales that when you actually meet a person, you just can't believe that you're actually meeting them. So this is a sad day, but it also should be a day of celebration. It should be a celebration of Hank Aaron, and we should learn from Hank Aaron and what he taught us. And really, Hank Aaron taught us to just be the best version that you can be, and there's going to be things that are out of your control. And ultimately, we could stand up to racism. And racism should never occur. But for Hank Aaron, he had to face it on the biggest stage with death threats, people threatening to kidnap his children. And he got to the ballpark every day and just continued, even with all that he was facing, to hit home run after home run after home run. And that was his way that he was allowed to be able to stand up to all this hate. So my condolences to his family. My condolences to baseball fans around the world. And may Hank Aaron rest in peace. Zach Gelb Show right here on a Friday. We'll come on back. CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts on the Zach Gelb Show for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts. All right, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I'm sure that this is going to be covered on the broadcast because Jim Nantz, as a play-by-play man, is as well-prepared and as good as a broadcaster as they come. But with this matchup of Patrick Mahomes and also Josh Allen on Sunday at Arrowhead, the second title game, the AFC title game, was the first game you will have Tom Brady going up against Aaron Rodgers, Bucks and Packers. I'm kind of surprised this week in the storylines how we have not heard more about how it was the Buffalo Bills back in that 2017 draft, the draft I was actually at in Philadelphia, where the Bills were the team that traded away that pick. And then Mahomes, Chiefs move up, and boom, the Chiefs get Patrick Mahomes. Now, at the time, no one knew the importance of it. You go back to that draft class, what is that draft class really going to be remembered for? The first thought from that draft class is the Chicago Bears moving up from 3-2, and the Bears taking Mitch Trubisky. Because in that moment, I remember thinking when I was at the Art Museum at Philadelphia, all right, the Bears trade up. They're clearly going to take a quarterback. They need a quarterback. They're going to take Deshaun Watson. And then you hear that the pick is Mitch Trubisky, quarterback out of UNC. Now, I knew about Mahomes. I remember seeing Mahomes play in college. Heck, this is a story that I always tell. There was a radio row where Mahomes was about to become an NFL player. So we're talking February. I want to say it was in Houston. That would make sense. Super Bowl 51. Because the Houston Super Bowl was the 28-3 comeback. Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. And I remember Patrick Mahomes was on Radio Row with his agent, Lee Steinberg. And no one, I mean no one, was putting Patrick Mahomes on the air. Think about that. Like, I remember vividly Patrick Mahomes, like he did interviews that day, but it was easy to get him on. Patrick Mahomes, the reason why I saw him there that day, I remember seeing a college radio station right in front of me. It was Fordham, where my set was at the time. I was working for a station in Princeton, New Jersey, a small AM station. And the college radio station in front of me was two kids from Fordham. And they had Patrick Mahomes on. Now, in a normal radio row, for example, if there was a radio row this year, if COVID didn't exist, if the Chiefs aren't in the game, I don't even know if Patrick Mahomes shows up. But if he does, he's doing 6-7 interviews, and he's getting on out of there. And those 6-7 interviews are with who? Probably like Jim Rome, probably like Christopher Mad Dog Russo, Fox, ESPN, and like that's about it. And maybe one of the local stations in Kansas City. So really, Mahomes, even though he's a first-round pick, even though he was a top-10 pick, he was really an unknown at the time. When the Chiefs made that pick, I remember people were saying, why didn't they draft Deshaun Watson? Because Watson was the third quarterback off the board. It went Trubisky, it went Mahomes, and then it did go Deshaun Watson. And look at what Patrick Mahomes did turn into. Because Patrick Mahomes, he sat behind Alex Smith for a year. And then the next year, Alex Smith gets traded to Washington's football team. Mahomes starts. Mahomes in his first year as a starter. And I remember that offseason. I remember that preseason where there was a lot of criticism. What are the Chiefs going to do? Mahomes is a big unknown. And Mahomes that first year threw 50 touchdown passes and won the league MVP. And then the year after that, wins the Super Bowl last year. And now he's in his third straight AFC title game. And this is another stat. And I'll bring this story full circle in just a bit and get to my point. In the Kansas City Chiefs' existence, at Arrowhead, they never had a home AFC championship game until Patrick Mahomes showed up. That one up against the Pats, where the Chiefs lost in that overtime thriller, that was the first home AFC title game at Arrowhead for the Kansas City. How about those Chiefs? Since then, they hosted it again last year where they beat the Titans after being down 10 points, came back one, and now they host it for a third consecutive year. Talk about the significance in just an early career that Patrick Mahomes has made. But getting back to draft night, and this has not been a storyline that's been talked about much this week, and I'm kind of surprised by it. Maybe people just don't realize it, or maybe people just don't think it's a significant storyline. I do. So that trade with the Bills and the Chiefs, just to give you a little background, that was McDermott's first year in Buffalo. He's hired in January, and he was there for the draft. The Bills were in the process of moving on from Doug Whaley, their old general manager. Brandon Bean was not in the fold. They got rid of Doug Whaley right after the draft. Bean eventually gets it a few months later. I was reading a Sporting News article about it today. And in the Sporting News, it said a reason why McDermott didn't want to take a quarterback there is a new GM was coming in. And that could be, you know how relationships are. A new GM comes in, wants to find his own guy. That's a franchise-defining move if you take a quarterback in that spot. Now, we don't know if they would have taken Mahomes. We don't know if they would have taken Watson. But they ended up trading back. And through that deal, and they got more picks from it, and they also turned it into more picks from that as well. The three notable players that they got, Tre'Davious White, Deion Dawkins, and Tremaine Edmonds. So they have three from that deal. They were able to turn it into three starters, three important players on an AFC title team. Now, if they didn't get their quarterback, that would be looked back at as a big-time blunder. Because if you go back to Josh Allen's first season, people were bringing that up. Wow, the Chiefs could have not got Mahomes if the Bills kept the pick. And now the Bills have this unknown quarterback out of Wyoming who went seventh overall in Josh Allen. Now looking back at it all these years later, you get one of the better cornerbacks in the game in Tre'Davious White, an underrated offensive lineman in Deion Dawkins, who's a captain, and Tremaine Edmonds, who means a lot to the Buffalo Bills team. So you factor that in with Josh Allen, the Bills clearly, it worked out for them. Because Bean, McDermott, they built up this culture, and they're 60 minutes away from a Super Bowl. If you ask me, though, would you rather have Mahomes or Tre'Davious White, Deion Dawkins, Tremaine Edmonds, and Josh Allen? I'm sure some people would say they'd rather have those four guys because they're multiple players on a team, and Allen is looking like he's going to be an MVP for years and years to come, and Tre'Davious White's a stud lockdown corner, and Deion's a left tackle that's going to be there for a while in Buffalo, but Mahomes is just on a different level of greatness. However, the Bills' decision may come back to not haunt them this weekend. Because if the Bills walk out with the victory, how are you going to look back and say, oh, yeah, that's a terrible decision? Even if they lose, it's not a terrible decision. Even with what Mahomes has turned into and what Mahomes has become. But it is just an interesting storyline where I think a lot of people, when they look at this matchup, they're talking about, oh, well, they played each other in week six. Chiefs dominated. Oh, it's Mahomes. It's Allen. That's the talking points. McDermott, Andy Reid. If it wasn't for the Bills making that trade, maybe they have Mahomes. And who knows what the Chiefs would have become because, hey, as talented as that roster is, I don't think Alex Smith is winning a Super Bowl with the Kansas City Chiefs. So think about how much that did affect. And for the Bills, you still got three starters. And then the next year, you did get your guy, not from that trade, but you did get your guy in Josh Allen, who's now blossomed into a stud in the National Football League. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll break. When we come on back, we got a poll question for you. What do you think the Super Bowl matchup is going to be? Could it be Chiefs-Packers? Could it be Chiefs-Bucks? Will it be Bills-Packers? Will it be Bills-Bucks? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. It's absolutely bonkers to think that Tom Brady coming up on Sunday is going to play in his 14th conference championship game. That's just wild. That's ridiculous. 19 years as a starting quarterback, he's going to play in his 14th conference championship game. So let me just quickly go through all of them because I'm going to make it a point of, and I don't know if you agree with this, Ryan, but I kind of feel this way. And full disclosure, right now I think the Packers are going to win the game. I do. I'm picking the Packers. Full disclosure, I'm taking the Packers. I think it's going to be a close game. I have not heard someone this week say that they're going to take the Buccaneers. And this is not as if this is such a mismatch. Heck, I know that they're different teams than from what they were, but the Buccaneers earlier this year were down 10-0 to Green Bay, scored 38 unanswered, and won the game. Now, how much does that factor into this all these weeks later? Nothing. It's a totally different game. But this is a Buccaneers team that they're coming off a victory up against the Saints where they forced three interceptions, also a fumble, and the offense didn't even play well. So I could see why people are picking the Packers, but I don't think that the Packers are a lock to win this game. Do you get that feel as well? Have you heard anyone? Let me ask you this first. Have you heard anyone take the Buccaneers? Anyone of importance to take the Buccaneers this week? You know, not just like some egg face, 2, 3, 4, 6. And that could actually be a very, people are going to listen to that when I say that, be like, oh, you know, what a cocky person Zach Gelb is. Because let's be real, like, I'm not even of that much of importance. But I'm just saying, have you heard people that do this for a living that are not in Tampa Bay, aren't, you know, let's go Bucks, fire the cannon, 6, 7, 2, 3, 4, 1, 18th to the ninth power on Twitter. Have you heard anyone say that the Buccaneers are going to win this game?
No. Yeah, it's been Packers. There's really no doubt about it. Like, not even many questions, really. Forget picking the Bucks. Not many, like, doubts about the Packers at all.
Yeah.
You know, like, leaning or feeling uncertain about it.
And Jordy Nelson said this to us the other day, and I think it was spot on. I even said this yesterday, too. I reiterated the point. I'll reiterate it again. Jordy Nelson, when you look at the Packers, it's not as if when you look at the final scores, they're blowing teams out. However, when you watch them play, you don't think they're going to lose. That Rams game, I know that it got out of hand once Lazard caught that 58-yard touchdown, but it was technically a game at 25-18. And no one thought that the Packers were going to lose that game. Now, I think you would say, I know that the Rams beat the Bucs this year, but the Bucs are a better team and more of a threat than the Rams. You agree with that?
Yes, overall.
Ooh,
yes.
No hesitation.
Rams have a great defense.
They have a great defense, but they got a terrible quarterback. I know that may be a little bit harsh, but that quarterback, Jared Goff, he's not a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He can get to a Super Bowl. He got to a Super Bowl. Do I think he'll ever get back to a Super Bowl? No, I don't. So here's what's going to happen if the Bucs are going to win in this game. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to need Brady to be a vintage Brady. This, I know that's not this great analysis. Oh, Brady's got to be Brady, duh. But this Bucs defense will have moments of struggle up against Aaron Rodgers because of how great Rodgers is and how great Davante Adams is and what that connection is. If I ask you right now, over, under, 3.5 total touchdowns for the Packers on Sunday, do you take the over or you take the under 3.5 total touchdowns?
Oh, over, yeah.
Over
easily. I think they score a lot of points.
Okay. So you have them greater than, that would say, 4 touchdowns, 28 points.
Greater than 28, yes, sir.
All right, what happens if I put it right at 4?
I'd probably still take the over.
So you think they're going to get 5 touchdowns?
I do.
So that's the case. Here's how the Bucks. If you think the game's going to be that high scoring, and I think the game's going to be like 31-27, somewhere around there, which now that may not be considered high scoring, but for the playoffs, I still think that is a big number, a high scoring number. It's not a video game number. It's not 42-38 or 41-38. But for the Bucs, they're really going to need that defense. If the Bucs get one turnover, depending on where it is during the course of the game, if they're down 14 with 2 minutes left, they get a turnover. But if they get a turnover somewhere in the first three quarters and turn it into a touchdown, that's going to have to be part of the formula. And then you'll need still probably then a late stop to get a W if you are the Bucs. But you got, don't you got to think, Brady, if he's going to win this game, he's going to need two long drives that result in touchdowns. And probably, right, Ryan, if I had to just try to guesstimate this here, Brady's going to have to throw for 3 passing touchdowns, no picks, and maybe Leonard Fournette, Jones, or whoever it may be, they need to get 2 rushing touchdowns. It seems like they're going to have to score 5 touchdowns to win.
I think so. I like the point you made, too. Long drives. You got to keep this Packers offense off the field. To your point, part of the reason the Rams didn't have a chance, they couldn't move the ball, sustain drives, and you just keep putting Rodgers on the field. Can't stop them.
And at least they have a threat at the running back spot. You know, they have some guys that could run the football in Tampa. You look at the other game, if you get to the AFC title game, Devin Moda Singletary is going to have to play a role in this game. I know he's not been good this year out of FAU, and I know there was some hype from him out of FAU, some underrated hype. When you talk to football draft evaluators and all that, Motor Singletary, with no Zach Moss, with Moss now being out, you have to find a way for him to do something. And I have a feeling in that game, are the Bills even going to run the ball 16, 17 times? I don't even know. Do me a favor, because it seems as if they ran the ball 7 times last week. Look at last week, how many times they ran the football. And what was a relatively low-scoring game, it was a low-scoring game, 17-3, and one of those scores came off a touchdown. I like this Buffalo offense. I like Josh Allen. I like Stephon Diggs. I like Cole Beasley. I like John Brown. But we talk about how the Bucs are going to have to keep up with the Packers. The Bills' offense, yeah, you like that offense. It's humming. But with no threat of a run game right now, and if they can't get a threat of a run game, coming up on Sunday in 2 days, and if they just throw, there's going to be a recipe for an interception. I know Allen's done a good job protecting the ball. I know Allen's been great. But if you're Kansas City, Kansas City does not have Kansas City's defense playing well, but they are not a great defense. I like Spags a lot. If Allen's going to have to throw the ball 48, 50 times, it's going to be a mistake or two that's going to be made, one would think. What was the breakdown from last week? Can I guess?
Sure.
I'm going to say, well, do this. Tell me how many times he threw the football. I'll give you how many times I ran it.
37 pass attempts from Josh Allen.
14 rushes.
A little bit higher, 16.
They ran the football 16 times.
But Josh Allen tied for the team lead in rushing attempts with 7.
That's a problem.
So running backs themselves ran the ball just 9 times.
That's a problem. What was the stat line for the backs there, Motor Singletary? What'd he do?
So he had 25 yards on 7 carries, and then TJ Yeldon had a big 4-yard performance on 2 carries.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Allen only contributed 3 yards on the ground with 7 scrambles.
That TJ Yeldon performance was very memorable.
Yes, yes.
So, hey, it's real. I really do believe the things to watch, the 2 things that I am focusing on the most this weekend, when you just look at the offense side of the ball, can the Bills find a way to get something out of the run game? And then for Tampa, can they go on those long drives to keep Rodgers on the sideline? So Brady going into his 14th conference championship game, and it seems as if no one's picking the Bucs, and I think this is going to be a close game that the Packers will win. If you go back to all these conference championship games, 2001, Brady got hurt in that game. Bledsoe comes off the bench, throws a touchdown. People thought the Steelers were going to win. That was the Steelers' home game. In 2003, people did think the Patriots were going to win, but they were going up against Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. 2004, that was Big Ben's first year. Pats going to the Steelers. The Steelers, I want to say they were 15-1. They had 1 loss that year. Now, the Patriots were on the verge of becoming back-to-back champions, young quarterback. That was probably a toss-up if I had to look back at it. 2006, could go either way, toss up. That was the game the Pats are up, well, I think 21-6 we said the other day. And then the Colts came storming on back in that second half. That was a toss up game. Actually, quite frankly, people probably said that the Patriots are going to win that game because of how much they own Peyton Manning in the career with Brady and Belichick at that point. 2007, the Pats are rolling. They were undefeated. Philip Rivers came into Foxborough with a torn ACL. People were picking the Patriots. The Patriots had a little bit of an absence then. They didn't make the AFC Championship game in 08, 09, 2010, 2011. Or no, 2011 they returned. And that was the Billy Cundiff game. They were expected to win that game, and they did so. The year after that, they got the Ravens again. People thought the Patriots were going to win, but it was a redemption story. Ravens win, go to the Super Bowl. Then you had the blackout. It was Ravens up against the 49ers. Ravens end up getting that ring and send off Ray Lewis off into the sunset. Then after that, the Patriots made the conference championship game up against the Broncos. They were not expected to win that game. The Broncos won 26-16. Patriots were banged up that year. The year after that, they go up against the Colts with Andrew Luck. That was the infamous Deflategate game. Patriots blow them out. LeGarrette Blount was awesome. Even Nate Solder caught a touchdown in that game, 45-7. Patriots were expected to win that one. The next year, Patriots went into Denver, Manning's final season. That was considered a toss-up game, even though it was a home game for Denver. Patriots scored a touchdown late, couldn't get the two-point conversion. Broncos go to the Super Bowl. Patriots Steelers the next year, Patriots expected to win. Patriots Jaguars the year after that, Patriots expected to win. Patriots Chiefs, even going into Arrowhead, I thought the Patriots were going to win that game. And then that was the last time the Patriots made it to the AFC title game. So a lot of these games, yeah, early on, you know, the Steelers game, here and there, maybe a Colts game, a Broncos game. The Patriots were maybe not expected to win, but this is really the first time where Brady goes into a championship game. Can't say AFC because it's in the NFC. It is the first time in the NFC. But when he goes into a championship game, and it just does not seem that there's a conviction that he's going to win the game. And sure, probably that Denver one, looking back at all of them, the first Denver one, that was the one where I just didn't see a way the Patriots could win with how Manning was rolling, and also the Patriots, just their roster was decimated that year. But I think this is a good Bucs team. I've been saying all throughout the year, this Bucs team reminds me, different style, but it reminds me of the path that the Patriots took in Super Bowl 53, where they were not strong in the regular season, they just turned it up in the postseason. So we'll find out who's going to win. Even without, it sounds like I'm trying to make the argument for the Bucs to win, I'm still going to take the Packers, but I do believe that's going to be a one-score game with about 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And we'll see if Brady can go on another magical run, or if it's going to be Rodgers going to the Super Bowl for the second time in his career.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.